In Land Without God, Manix Flynn writes, narrates and co-directs the telling of the story of his own family and the industrial schools and institutions where some of them were incarcerated. The film opens with a conversation between Manix and his sister, Evelyn.
I wouldn't be giving too much away. I mean,
I know, but
do you know enough about us?
But you think it's important to tell the story?
Yeah, but I think an awful lot of people know enough about us because...
Forget about other people, okay? What they think about us.
Is this only about our family or...
It's our family is just one part of a bigger picture of what happened out there. You know what I mean? It's not about personalising things. It's about what happened. Do you think it's important that this story is told of what happened?
Yeah, but once people wouldn't judge us over it, you know what I mean?
But they're not going to judge us over.
That's Manix Flynn and his sister Evelyn in the opening sequence from Manix's new film, Land Without God. A set of interviews with Manix's own family, trip across the country back to the industrial school in Netterfrack, where Manix was an inmate as a boy, and also a recalling of youth in Dublin and how poverty and the forces of the church and state were very much part of what shaped the life of Manix Flynn and his family. I was very interested at Evelyn's remark at the end of that, or towards the end of that clip, Manix, when she says, people will judge us, people will judge us. Were you afraid of, or had you any qualms about telling the story that you wanted to tell for those reasons?
Absolutely. I was very kind of like apprehensive about the impact and about being judged and about, you know, people projecting back onto us, you know, a certain kind of a shame and a certain sort of guilt. And also because it's such an intimate portrait, you know what I mean? And it's, you go into such kind of, you know, intimate and loving detail about a very difficult period of our lives, that, yeah, there is that foreboding. And, of course, everybody in Ireland think, like, you know what I mean, that they have their secrets, but it's happened to everybody in Ireland. You know, Ireland is a big open secret, so we're always trying to kind of make sure that no one sees us, you know, in the place that we shouldn't be seen in, and that we close the windows over and keep your business to yourself, and including any trespass or any issue of around abuse or sexual abuse. All of these things were closed down. And of course, everybody is always afraid of being shamed, of being, you know, undermined or you know, or being pointed out. So everybody keeps their head low in this country.
So in some ways, by telling the story of your own family, you're telling, you would hope, the story that a lot of other people and their families might identify with and say, ah, we weren't alone, we can talk about this.
That's a fact. You know what I mean? Ireland, you know, for all of its great and glory, like, you know what I mean, avoids the truth. We avoid honesty. You know what I mean? We talk around situations. And of course, you know what I mean, you know, this is a catalyst for other families to come forward and open up. I mean, you know, we know this. You know, we look at dramas that are taking place in the Abbey and the Gate and over the last 100 years in Ireland, all about the family, yet nobody talks about it. We use these representations, but really and truly, you know what I mean, we don't. Sean McGarren's book, The Dark, but no one really followed on with that and thought it was closed down, get rid of him, you know, get him out of the job, close it down.
Were the other members of your family, were they hard to persuade? And were there some family members? Because I think
it was very difficult, Sean. It was very difficult. It's very difficult to sit down at the best of times, even with therapists, you know, and tell the story. It's very difficult to actually to arrange for your whole family or for certain members of your family to come in and talk about the most intimate details of what happened in their childhoods that none of us actually really knew about. I mean, when you consider what happened to this family, this is just one of many families in the country. So it was very, very difficult. And some of the members of my family simply won't go there. You know, for whatever reasons, because they don't want to be judged, because they don't want to be, you know, and it will take them a time in that journey to come to this piece. But now we have it. Now we have Land Without God. I set out 20 odd years ago to make Land Without God. It took 2 years to it took 10 years to research and make. It was a very difficult thing to make, but I think it's a very good celebratory story that's full of literature, full of poetry, and I would hope that the public would actually come and see this, because it's their history.
The other thing that, I mean, and there are very dark aspects to the story. There are very upsetting aspects to the story. You know, yourself, your brothers, your sisters just like shipped off. I think one of your sisters talks about you were first sent to Letterfrack. Was it for a dinky?
Basically, yes. Yeah.
A dinky, a little dinky car.
And not going to school. And mainly not going to school.
This was the thing that really got to me when I was listening to certain sections. It's your brother Patrick talks about. Let's listen to a clip where he explains why maybe going to school was not what you wanted
Absolutely.
To do. You were having a lot of fun.
We were having a great time.
You're having a great time Absolutely. Playing around in the streets. So Patrick's explaining to us here what's this school thing? Why should we be made go there?
Yeah.
You know, well, how could you take a four-year-old kid that doesn't believe in his mum and then throw her into a school? You know, there was no kindergartens then where you'd walk a kid up to going to school. We were just thrown into them. And with their name alone, we were put at the back of the class. You know? Oh, he's one of the Flynns. You know what I mean? These people don't want to know anything. You know, we were branded as being bad people. You know, and people didn't like what we'd done. You know? Because we were out thieving. You know? And I didn't like the idea of being put into school and being locked away because I was so used to running around the streets being happy.
That's the bit, it's the bit at the end that I love, actually. I was so used, this to your brother, Babe, Mannix Flynn's brother, Patrick, speaking in the film Land Without God that Mannix is speaking to us about this evening. That you were happy on the streets. Now, just explain, how happy were you, you know?
Was delighted.
But is it rose-tinted spectacles when you
look back at it now? No, it's not rose-tinted spectacles. And I can remember it now. I mean, the streets are still there. You had this very kind of interesting place. And I was talking to Kay Sheehy earlier on today about the wonderful city of Dublin that was dilapidated, that was open and free. There wasn't any particular gates on. There was no CCTV cameras. The St. Stephen's Green was wide open. The Phoenix Park was open. People didn't lock their bikes or their doors. A child could wander off, you know what I mean? Like, and we didn't go to school and we went up to St. Stephen's Green. Don't forget, I was from Mercer House just off York Street, St. Stephen's Green. You could wander into Fuller's, wander into BT's, wander into Woolworths, learn how to spell Woolworths. All of these things were very, very, very interesting. There was no actual harm. As a matter of fact, recently I came across, I was going through RTE archives, okay, in the middle of the night when I finished my political work in Dublin City Council, I tend to log on to RTE, I tend to go through the archives. What did I come across? But in Wickfern Square, and I came across my entire family in St. Stephen's Green, and Eamon the butler and Gareth Ron Galdron had recorded them in full swing. I'll send it on to you later on this evening, but it's there. Patrick is in there, Mannix is in there, my younger brother who died, and Bernard's in there, and a couple of kids in the flats, all playing around the fountains. And he incorporates them into this park as if they're part of the whole landscape. He doesn't question whether they're going to school or whether they should or shouldn't be there, saying, who's minding those children? And they're jumping in around the fountain, they're jumping in around the memorial there for the famine outside St. Stephen's Green. They're running around the beautiful park, free as breezes. And you know, the last shot is one of my brothers kneeling down, having found this dog that he thinks is going to be his, and the owner then takes the dog off. It's quite wonderful.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
And obviously you refer to the fact that there was another brother, Mannix. You're actually Gerard Mannix.
I'm actually Gerard Mannix. There was a brother before me who passed away.
And then did Mannix, did that become a thing after your brother died, or what? Or was it later in life that Mannix became the way you were known?
I took his name after that. We were all known because we're all alike. So when the guards came and asked who was who to take us away, I'd say my name is Mannix, he'd say his name is Bernard, he'd say his name was Anne. It was all
I am Spartacus.
Yeah, basically that's the way it was. I mean, the guards come into the flats, they pointed to the Flynn household, you know.
Yeah, but that, there is that other side to, you know, the fact that you were running around the streets and that you were doing all of these things. What effect did the poverty of the situation have? Because there wasn't a lot of money flying around.
There wasn't a lot of money, but I mean, children don't know they're poor until someone points them out. Until, again, my sister at the beginning of the programme talks about being judged. You're judged poor, you know what I mean? And I didn't know I was poor until other people told us I was poor. And we mentioned that in the film. And then you're identified as poor and you're identified as urchin and so on and so forth. But I mean, the poor issue and the poverty issue only really kicked in when I was trying to struggle out of that particular process. And it's still there to this particular day with members of my family and members of my community. I mean, we didn't make ourselves poor, but because we were poor then we became fodder for courts, fodder for the children's courts, and fodder then for the institutions, and we'd no representation and we'd no empowerment. The most we could hope for was kind of a thing called social justice, you know what I mean, or one of the organisations.
Was there much of it around?
There wasn't really, because again it was super controlled by the state and super controlled by the church, and all of that was all about being subservient and being closed down and being apologetic for yourself.
An interesting sequence for me, at any rate, of the journey across the country. Like, I knew you were heading west and you were heading from the city into the bleakness that is, you know, a beautiful bleakness in many ways, the landscape of Connemara. How difficult was it for you to go back to Letterfrack, given, in fact, I should set this up first, the story you tell on the way about abuse that started, was this on your very first trip to Letterfrack?
When you're making pure art, when you're making pure truth, when you're in a room, you know, in Barcelona, working with the other filmmakers, trying to come up with the language to actually bring you in there, that was the most traumatic part of it. Going out to Letterfrack and doing the filming and walking around that place, which is now Connemara National Park and Connemara Furniture College, it has a mixed feeling. I mean, I love the landscape and I actually love Connemara and I adore Galway and I love my country and I love the countryside and I understand the beauty. But with that beauty comes the terrible beauty, you know what I mean, comes the tragedy. Yeah. And I so all the time have to deal with that. Even now I have to deal with that. Every morning I wake up, I have to deal with that. We all have to deal with that. Some mornings we don't want to go into work, we've got to deal with it. You know, we're human beings. So, but I don't let it cling to me. I don't use it as an excuse. I don't, you know, live in the problem. I live in the solution. Yes, it was difficult. Going back down there, it's very, very difficult going back down there to that place and to look at it standing there masquerading as some sort of, like, you know national park. I look at on the national parkland and I see tourists wandering across and enjoying the Diamond Mountain and one of the, but they've no idea that they're actually walking on our tears. They're walking on what happened on that landscape. And the reason why I bring you into the landscape is that most people bring you into the buildings, we bring you into the landscape because that's where the real trauma actually happened. You know, that's where the real kind of connectivity of the tragic story happened, not in rooms or corridors or anything like that, because we were on that land 24 hours a day working in all sorts of weather. So while you might not
terrible
have been
things happening,
you may not have
forests.
Been beaten, but the weather would beat you. We'd no protection. So you can imagine the storms recently 10 times more than that, and cold.
You bring your nephews and nieces in at a certain point too. How important was that intergenerational aspect for you?
I think it was extremely important to bring three generations of the family into it, because none of us knew each other's story. Nobody ever spoke about that story.
Yeah,
nobody
one of your
ever
sister
knew.
Says that when you went to Letterfrack, she didn't know where you were
she
going.
She didn't know where it was gone. So it was important that they would actually partake in this situation, that they'd understand that we'd all actually had a similar story and that it was all interconnected.
One final question on it, Manik. There's a point at which your brother Patrick, he was in Dangan, I think, wasn't he? He talks about going back and how important that was for him to actually, you know...
It was St. Joseph's Clonmel as well.
St. Joseph's and Clonmel. He wanted to go back to try to put it to rest. It didn't work for him. What about making this film? Has that done something for you? Has it given you a kind of a facility to I don't like the phrase put it to rest, but has it helped you deal with this in any better way?
Again, these things are not being put to rest. The door of the past isn't closed because the past isn't the past in this particular incident. It's a step in the right direction to get the general public to do there. It's a step in the right direction in terms of natural justice. It also is an opportunity for us to tell our truth, to own that truth and to share it with the people. And hopefully at the end of the day, I would ask, you know, I mean, that the people who, for instance, who will be managing the Artane band would consider disbanding the band, because that's a real traumatic reminder where we don't want to go about what happened to us in those institutions. So when we see that uniform, when we see that band marching onto those fields, that's deeply upsetting for us, I have to say. The film at the end of the day is something that's a state document. If I was abroad and I was looking for something that would represent what happened in this country in an intelligent way, I'd look to Land Without God. I'm very proud of it, and I hope that the Irish people will come and see it, and I hope that they're very proud of it. It's the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth and the honest truth, and it's turned into creative art, and I think that that's the key to it, that truth is turned into poetry and is given to people in a safe way.
Manik Sladen speaking to us about his film Land Without God. It will be on limited release initially, and you can find out full information of where and how you might get to see it on the website, which is landwithoutgod.com.